Vietnam's economic transformation is one of the most dramatic of the last 50 years. A country that once faced severe shortages is now among the world's most trade-open economies. And the human impact of that transformation has been huge. Just 30 years ago, over half of the population lived in extreme poverty, whereas now only about 2% do. This is Ideas in Development, a Vox Dev podcast on economic policy and research. And I'm Oliver Hanney, the managing editor here at Vox Dev.
And I'm Karthik Akhileshwaran, co-founder of Growth Teams. And in this mini-series, we're learning about sector success stories from Latin America, Africa, and Asia, directly from the policymakers who helped to make them happen. Today we're asking, how did Vietnam build a market economy in practice, opening markets, enabling private business, and integrating into the global economy? To take us through Vietnam's economic transformation, we're joined by Madam Pham Chi Lan, the former Secretary General of the Vietnam Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and an economist who advised Vietnam's leadership during key reform years. Madam Lan, welcome to Ideas in Development.
Thank you for joining us. You graduated in foreign trade and economics in 1966. What drew you to studying economics at that time? And what was it like to study in Hanoi during the 60s?
When I finished my high school education in 1961, it's the time when Vietnam started a new five-year plan with the main purpose of trying to develop the economy of Vietnam in the context of the world had the peaks after World War II. So many countries have been developing very well, and many developing countries like Vietnam, which used to be under colonialism, during the past, gained independence and tried to develop. So Vietnam wished to follow them to develop our own. So the young people graduated from high school were encouraged to study economics in order to help the country in developing the economy, particularly in Vietnam after a long time of war. That's why I applied to the National Economic University, which was established only one year earlier than my high school graduation. And among the industry that I want to learn was foreign trade, because at foreign trade faculty, I could study not only Vietnamese, but also other markets in the world. And also at that faculty, you could learn a foreign language, particularly English language, that I very much want to learn. By that time, in the northern part of Vietnam, in Hanoi, in fact, very few universities where English were taught, only the foreign language university. And the economic university is another choice for me, because we could learn both a foreign language, the English language, and international trade and economy in general.
After you studied, you ended up working at Vietnam's Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Could you tell us a bit about that and your time working there?
When I finished my study at the university, I joined Vietnam Chamber of Commerce and Industry, because that was the organization just established 3 years before my graduation. In 1963, the chamber was officially established in Vietnam, and it was among very few non-governmental organizations established in Vietnam by that time, dealing in economic terms, economic fields. And at the chamber, I could have the chance to work with countries out of the socialist bloc. By that time, Vietnam, the northern Vietnam, was a member of the socialist bloc. So we had mainly trading and economic ties with the former socialist countries. including the Eastern European countries, Soviet Union, and China, very few of them. And the majority countries in the world were non-socialist countries. And the chamber was established in order to promote relations between Vietnam and non-socialist countries. So at the chamber, I could have the chance to develop my understanding on for international trade in general and improving and practicing my English language as well. So that is why I decided to join the chamber by that time. Of course, during that time, by 1966, the American war started in Vietnam 1 year earlier, and American aircraft started to bomb Hanoi to attack the northern part of Vietnam. So the chamber by that time had little things to do during the war, because foreign businesses were not ready to come to Hanoi when we were attacked by the American aircraft by that time. At the same time, with the such war, most of those who were belonging to non-socialist country had very strong relations with the U.S., so they don't want to have any problems with the U.S. if they could do something in businesses with the North Vietnam. So that is why we had little things to do, but we had time to study to have more reading, to study more on the international trade system. And we could still try our best to maintain some connections with businesses, mainly based in Hong Kong.
So the Doi Moi policies were a key turning point in Vietnam's journey. Before we go into this series of reforms, which were launched in 1986, could you tell us what the Vietnamese economy looked like at that point in time? And given those circumstances, what was the overall vision of the Doi Moi reforms at that time?
1986 was really a year that people like me and those who lived in such years could never forget. And by that time, Vietnam still had very serious aftermath after the war. The war ended officially, the American War, in 1975. But only 2 years after that, we had the Cambodian War in the border in the southern part of Vietnam. And then in 1979, we had Chinese attacked Vietnam in the northern part with 600,000 soldiers. So we still have war there. At the same time, the aftermath of the war, not only American war, but the 30 continuous years of war against the French reoccupying Vietnam and American war really made Vietnam really, everything was damaged in this country. So the aftermath of the war was so serious, you can imagine. And at the same time, Vietnam was in an isolated conditions because of the embargo by the U.S. on Vietnam by that time. So most all countries of non-socialist one could not do any business with Vietnam because of the embargo. And Vietnam was fully isolated by the countries surrounding Vietnam in the Asia region. And that's the second one. And the third problem Vietnam was facing with was the market system were not recognized in Vietnam. Instead of using the market system available in the southern part of Vietnam before 1975, after 1975, the government of the northern part of Vietnam, when we had the reunified countries, decided to bring the socialist system to the south and apply the socialist economic system, the centrally planned economic system, to the southern part of Vietnam. And in the rural area for agriculture, we also applied the system of cooperatives in the north to the south. So when we asked the farmers in the South to join cooperatives, to work in a collective way, they could not accept. Every year, we had to import from 500,000 to 1 million tons of food grains. And that becomes so big, big problem for the country. And country become really among the poorest countries in the world with a very low income. And we had so many problems with the economy by that time. Partly because of the aftermath of the war, partly because of the isolation, but more importantly, because of the economic system we applied to the South, the centrally planned system. So everyone could not accept such system to prolong for almost 10 years after the war and put Vietnam into a real crisis by that time. So that we wish to change. And because we could not do our own for the aftermath of the war, we could not do our own for the isolation. So the only thing that Vietnam can do for our own is transform the economy to remove the centrally planned system and apply the market system in order to allow everybody to develop, to do some business, to develop by them own, rather than the state trying to do everything to feed the whole society. So in that way, we could, in a very short period of time, gain the first success, particularly only less than 2 years after the reform. In 1988, we could have already the first 1 million tons of rice surplus for export. So from the shortage of 1 million tons, only over 1 year after that, we could have a 1 million tons surplus for export. So that become so good evidence to the leadership of Vietnam and to entire society of Vietnam that yes, we really need to reform. We had a lot of discussions, a lot of debates among top leaders, between the leaders and the academics and the people, the society, businesses, and at the different levels, local level as well as central level, we had so many discussions and debates on how to get rid of the crisis that Vietnam had after the war. Particularly on the economic system, centrally planned system to be continued or to change to another system that's more appropriate for Vietnamese condition and could help Vietnam more to improve our own conditions become a very big question mark, very big question to debate, and particularly at the top level of leaders. Because most of leaders in Vietnam by the time were the one who had that long process with the revolution, revolution against the foreign aggressions to Vietnam and to gain independence from Vietnam. So they had a very strong believance on the socialism. But eventually, the academics in Vietnam, as well as business in Vietnam, and people like us at the Chamber of Commerce could bring the lesson, we could learn lessons from other countries surrounding Vietnam and prove to the government that if we could have the market system, we can solve many problems by them own. We could not rely only on the state. We must have the whole society involved in the economic development. At the same time, in different localities in Vietnam, like in Vĩnh Phúc province, in Long An province in the south, in Vietnam, we had leaders of the party units. So they decided to apply a more flexible system in their provinces. And they can prove that with more flexible system, the farmers, for example, had a much better motivation to cultivate better on their farms and supply more to the market. So this evidence could also help the top leaders to see by their own eyes on these initiatives, if applied wider to the countries, it could help Vietnam to get rid of the crisis which we were facing with. So by that way, by the voice of the people in the grassroots, the leaders who work closely with people in the grassroots, and the initiative, the courage of the leaders in different provinces or industries, we could help the leadership to understand and to accept the reform in Vietnam. And it took really 7 years until 1986 when we got the consensus to launch the reform. Comprehensive reform throughout the country.
You've talked there about how Vietnam arrived at the Doi Moi reforms in 1986 and some of the immediate benefits that Vietnam noticed from those reforms. I guess one thing to highlight is that it wasn't actually until 10 years later with the enterprise law that actually people in Vietnam had the right to start private businesses. Could you talk about how after the Doi Moi reforms and the opening up, you then got to this point where the enterprise law was introduced?
When we started to launch the reform process in Vietnam in late of 1986, we had the three major contents of the reform. The first is to transform from a centrally planned system to the market system under the supervision of the state. The second one is to develop the multi-sectoral economy in Vietnam rather than only state-owned sector and cooperatives. The third one is to open Vietnam to the world and trying to make friends with all countries in the world. So these are three major contents of the reform. We gradually transformed the system to the market, but on the development of multi-sectoral economy, there's been some hesitation. We opened at first only to small business and small industries, handicrafts and industry, very small one. We failed to provide a legal framework for private enterprises to be established with the full legal basis. Legal infrastructure for them to develop. But for the opening up of the Vietnamese market to the world, we recognized the role of a private sector of the world into Vietnam very early. Just 1 year after the reform, in December 1987, just 1 year after that, we introduced the law on encouragement of foreign direct investment into Vietnam. And that law was very open by that time. We allow foreign businesses to establish companies 100% owned by them. For joint venture, we accept the joint venture with up to 70% belonging to foreign ones. And the Vietnamese one has 30% only. We agree with that. And we agree with the other forms of investment as well. But in Vietnam, we still fail to provide the similar system to local businesses. And only in 1990, 1991, 5 years after the reform launch, we started to have a company law and the law on enterprises in Vietnam. But both laws were formed on the basis that private businesses could be established, but with the permissions by the government and could do only in the areas that the government allowed them to do. With such system, every small private businesses need to get the permission by the government. And in order to get a permission, they need 17 state agencies to provide the same for them. And it took quite a long time for them, from 3 months to 1 year or even 2 years to apply for a business field that they can do. And at the same time, they required also so many conditions like on the minimum capital they need to have. So yeah, at the chamber, we work with so many businesses, and they all say, oh, with such loss, we simply could not work. Simply could not work because it's too hard conditions and too difficult to set up a business. And that is why we started to try to bring the academics in different researches or surveys to see how these two laws could work well to develop private sector in Vietnam, and which constraints were the key one that the two laws had in order to prevent or to fail to provide opportunities for private sector in Vietnam to develop. And it took quite a few years before you can prove to the government and to the National Assembly of Vietnam that such law could not work. If we want to have a private sector of Vietnam to develop, if we want the internal strengths that the Vietnamese in businesses could be explored, we need another law. And we had the support at first by the then Prime Minister Võ Văn Kiệt. Prime Minister Võ Văn Kiệt had a meeting with the businesses in early 1993, and I was then serving as a Deputy Secretary General of the VCCI, Vietnam Chamber of Commerce and Industry, were invited to the South, to Saigon, in order to join a meeting between Prime Minister Võ Văn Kiệt and businesses in the private sector in the South to listen to them. And the Prime Minister Võ Văn Kiệt, who was among the key reformers, among the leaders of Vietnam, accepted our suggestions. And then he asked the MPI, Minister of Planning and Investment, to prepare a new law for businesses. At first, he asked us to revise the prevailing two laws, the company laws and enterprise law. But then we told them we could not revise the law only. We need a new law with a new principle that businesses can be free to do business in every area except the ones that the law prohibits them to do. Instead of the principle of the prevailing two laws, that businesses need the permission by the government to do any businesses. You need to change basically the principle for businesses to give back the freedom for running business to businesses. Only in that way you could have a good law for local private sector. And Võ Văn Kiệt agreed. And it's also good that in 1992, Vietnam revised the constitution. And in the constitution, the state of Vietnam encourage and protect the freedom rights to do business for the people of Vietnam. So based on that principle, that commitment in the constitution, we could develop the new law on enterprise law, the enterprise law enacted in passed by the parliament in 1999 and enacted from early 2000 onward. And it's a really so important change for the business environment in Vietnam. It could not only help the private enterprises in Vietnam to develop, but it can also help Vietnam to attract more FDI into Vietnam. Why? Because before that, FDI could have only their partners from the state-owned enterprises, which is quite different system of management, quite different motivation to do business. So only private sector could have the same business culture, business principle to work with foreign ones. So the foreign businesses were encouraged to come to Vietnam also partly because of the market in Vietnam is more open, widely, and the private sector in Vietnam started to develop and started to grow in order to help to work as their partners in the country. So in that way, it could help Vietnam to start a new period of development in which we could have private sector develop better, we could have more FDI coming to Vietnam. Of course, we also believe that with the private sector formed and developed very fast in Vietnam after the new enterprise law in 1999, it could see that the market system have been more developed when and in the different area in the country, because right after the enterprise law, the Parliament of Vietnam also decided to revise so many of the relevant laws. And also with that, we could feel more comfortable to started to push forward the relations between Vietnam and other countries surrounding Vietnam and the world. Vietnam joined ASEAN in 1995, but if Vietnam continue to maintain the centrally planned system by the constraint to private sector development, we could not make full use of the system in AFTA and in ASEAN to develop our own. And we could not also push forward our relation with the EU, which were also signed in July 1995, and the normalization of relation with the US in 1995. So I can say that that law, the enterprise law in Vietnam, could contribute to the development of Vietnam in many ways, in different aspects, not only for private sector it owns, but also for the market system more fully formed in the country. And the relations between Vietnam and different partners in the world could be more well developed.
And you touched on there the role of FDI a bit. I was wondering if you could maybe talk about the first major success story that Vietnam had in attracting foreign investment.
In fact, without FDI coming to Vietnam in the late of 1980s and in early 1990s, Vietnam could not become a country with a higher and higher GDP growth or more and more integrated in to the regional and the world economic system. And even private sector in Vietnam could hardly develop if we could not use the good examples of a foreign private businesses, how they could do so well in Vietnam. So they could help Vietnam in many ways, in providing good example on how businesses could develop, how important was the institutional system, policy and legal system, important, environment important for business development. We could also see how important is the relations with the outside world were important for Vietnam. And also later on, FDI with their running in the export trade, it could also help local businesses to learn the way to go global, to go to other markets. They could bring Vietnam to the global value chains in different way. At first, at very low level, using mainly low labor costs, everything is low, low, low in Vietnam, low price, low cost, and with that, we could export our own. But then later on, we could learn from them to improve our own and to get higher and higher value added for our items for export. And on technology, in fact, there's very few technology transfer from foreign businesses to Vietnam. Even at the beginning, many FDI committed to have a technology transfer to Vietnam. But actually, because almost 90% of them were working as 100% owned by them, so they have no motivation to transfer technology to Vietnamese local businesses if they were not in their own value chain, or they could not have the motivation to bring higher technology in Vietnam if Vietnam continue to provide them with own incentives. But still until now, almost 35% of export trade from Vietnam were made by foreign businesses in Vietnam rather than made in Vietnam and by Vietnamese enterprises. That's a big problem that we are facing with today, and we are trying very hard to change that. We still need FDI in many aspects, particularly when we want to develop to have a higher technology adopted in own industries in Vietnam to develop. We need to upgrade also the management system at both macro level and micro level at businesses in Vietnam. We need to improve the whole standard in Vietnam so that you can meet the new and higher standards in different markets in the world. So everything needs to be improved, and we need FDI to cooperate with Vietnam to help Vietnam for such improvement. But at the same time, we need to enhance our own system, our own competitiveness in order to develop. So today, we are trying to apply a more selective system for FDI in Vietnam, and more better policy to encourage FDI to set up their joint venture, their corporations with the Vietnamese enterprises, to have the supply chains more developed in Vietnam, to bring Vietnam to higher level in the supply chain in the region or in the world, rather than using Vietnam as a cheap labor cost country only. We are trying very hard to do that. But I think still the most important point will still relying on our own efforts to improve our legal infrastructure policies for such new development that we want to have, and to encourage to select new foreign FDIs into Vietnam in that way. In the past, we accepted every kind of FDI, every kind of that, and we don't mind much about how much value added they can bring to Vietnam. But today, we are changing our mindset, we are changing our way, and I hope that this time the government of Vietnam can do, because it's more than clear that we need to change. And at the same time, the leadership in Vietnam also already recognized that the private sector in Vietnam have been developing rather well and large enough, mature enough to accept to absorb the new development rather than relying on the old ways like we had so far. Today, we have big companies already setting up, and they are doing quite well. They are competing well, not only in domestic market in Vietnam with FDI and foreign supplier in Vietnam, but they can also go abroad, competitive abroad in many areas, in many items. And the role of local private sector in Vietnam today have been largely widely recognized in the country, particularly in the top leaders in Vietnam. Until only last year, still not much recognition on the role and the strength of local private sector. But for about 1 year now, the top leaders in Vietnam really could change their mindset, and they could recognize and were ready to give more opportunities to local and private sector to develop them all.
Madam Lan, you've touched on some of the challenges that are currently going on, especially with respect to foreign versus domestic. You mentioned that there's some data that suggests that Vietnam's domestic industry has still not fully taken off. So a big chunk of the exports from Vietnam are coming from foreign manufacturers. One question we had in this respect is Vietnam at risk of being stuck at a low rung in global value chains?
We are talking about the second stage of reforming Vietnam or innovation in Vietnam with the new policies by the top leaders in Vietnam. So this in the second stage, we need to upgrade our institutional system. And such institutional system should go more and more closer to the international standard on that. With that, we could have a better and positive system, a business environment for businesses in Vietnam, not only to survive, but to develop in a very challenging time in the world today. And that's the first. The second one, we need to use better the resources most available in Vietnam. So far, in fact, in Vietnam, we exploited too much our own natural resources, but not all of them were exploited in the most efficient way. So now we need to change the system, and we need to do better to make full use of the natural resources still available in Vietnam, and particularly on the human resource available in Vietnam. So far, we explore our own human resources mainly as a cheap labor cost and hardworking people. Today, we need to have people with more skillful people and with people that are ready to learn, to have a lifetime learning process in order to improve them on continuously in order to do better and to be ready for the new technology, the new skill needed in the country for long-term development. And only based on that, we can improve the productivity in Vietnam. So far, Vietnam could achieve rather high rate of growth of GDP, but not quite one with the development in general. And I think in future in Vietnam, the human resource development will be the key for our future development. Only when you have a higher quality of a human resource, you could get more access to new technology, you could have a better management system, better skin, everything needed for the future development. We could not feel satisfied with what we could achieve during the first 20 years. No, that's not enough. It's been too slow as compared to Korea or Taiwan, you know, the dragons in the Asia region. We need to do better. So it means we need to reform not only on economic system, but also on the social system, on educational system, even on the voice of people, the transparency system, the accountability system in the top management system in Vietnam, in the state of Vietnam. So we use all the good and bad lessons in the country as well as in the other countries to help to develop, to have the new reform process in Vietnam. And I think these are important. And today it's good that according to all the new documents that the party are introducing, what they are prepared to do for the next party congress, which will occur only in this month, this year. then we can have the new system of policies in which we could took on good and bad lessons from Vietnam's development.
You've talked a bit about this second stage of development that Vietnam is entering, and it seems like one of the things that will make that happen is if Vietnam can have some domestic businesses that do really well and become these success stories. And one potential example of that is with electric vehicles and VinFast. If listeners don't know VinFast, it's a global electric vehicle brand in Vietnam that was established in 2017. Could you tell us a bit about VinFast and the government's role in helping VinFast to become this big success?
VinFast was developed by Mr. Phạm Nhật Vượng, one of the biggest billionaires of Vietnam, among the six billionaires of Vietnam, but the biggest among them and the very first among the billionaires in Vietnam. He studied in the past in Ukraine, which were by the time a member of the former Soviet Union, and he started his first businesses in Ukraine. And when he could accumulate some capital, he decided to come back to Vietnam to do business. And that's a good and also a brave decision by him. In fact, by that time, the environment in the Soviet Union, the opportunity in the former Soviet Union, were still bigger and larger than Vietnam. Vietnam in early 1990s were still in the early days of the reform. Even the enterprise law were not available. So there are still a lot of constraints for private sector to develop. But he decided to come back to Vietnam. That's really a brave and a big decision. And I really very much welcome people like him to do so. So when he came back to Vietnam, he started first with some businesses in real estate. The population in Vietnam by that time was still rather poor. The middle income level was at a very small percentage. So there's no buyer, no market in Vietnam for real estate, except some facilities for foreigners. So foreigners only accept to do real estate for the facility for foreigners working in Vietnam, not for the population in Vietnam. But Vượng has different mind. He decided to develop for even a small percentage of middle income people in Vietnam, with the belief that based on that, he could develop more. And when he could become rich from real estate activities, he had ambitions in other areas. And when he decided to do in automobile, we all surprised, oh, that's so risky area. When we had already in Vietnam, about 10 foreign automobile makers have their assembling system in Vietnam. Toyota, Mitsubishi, Nissan from Japan, and those from Korea, Daewoo, Hyundai, Kia, from the US, and from Europe, we have Ford, we have Mercedes. So a lot of them have been in Vietnam, and they all were the one which developed with a long experience and very successful in the international market already. And the opportunities for developing countries to develop automobile industry were so scarce. We looked to other developing countries surrounding Vietnam, and we said no, they could have only assembling or some spare part producing only. When the international, the big one, have their own automobile industries and decided to assign them to develop something, some part for them. So why Vietnam could do that and how Vietnam could do that? But we decided to do with the ambition, with the aspiration that Vietnam could have in future our own automobile industry. He calculated and he believed that he could do that. So I think his aspiration could become true, mainly because from his own aspiration, he could attract and convince a number of others to work with him, to follow him, like Võ Quang Huệ, who used to work with ambassadors, with big companies in Germany, and could be very successful with Bosch in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, and decided to leave Bosch in order to help work at the beginning to develop the industry by working with the foreign partners, learning from them, and convincing them to cooperate with VinFast, to develop VinFast from the beginning. And from the beginning, we decided to select the best partners, the most advanced partners in the world, not by cheap one like the countries surrounding Vietnam, but go to Europe to study and to discuss and to negotiate and bring the technology mainly from the Germany, from partly from Italy, and from some other to Vietnam for VinFast. And then only a few years after VinFast's first products could be consumed in Vietnam and could be welcomed in the Vietnamese market, he made the decision to go to America and then to change the system to develop the electric one. EV is really very new and very challenging one. But we decided to do that. Again, we were shocked with that. We were shocked and we were worrying whether Vượng and VinFast could be successful or not. But Mr. Vượng himself foresee that we could not compete if we continue to develop automobile like the past one. The EV is the future for automobile industry. You need that. So he accepted to give up the normal automobile to develop EV. And for the government of Vietnam, the policy, in fact, at first was just anyway. This company, Vingroup, become very big already. It has its own capacity to do that. So it needs only the policy and the government to accept that. And if we can accept, we can provide so many incentives for foreign automobile companies to come to Vietnam just to assembly in Vietnam, why we could not help Vietnamese one to do the same? So I think the policy at first were only the government agreed to give him. And when VinFast developed that, it needs to do a lot for the first infrastructure for the land using in that, as in the roadway, the bridge to connect that with the Hải Phòng city and with Hanoi. So a lot of infrastructure need to be also by VinFast itself. So it can help not only the VinFast itself, but can help also partly the development of industries in Hải Phòng, the major port in the northern part of Vietnam, and the infrastructure in connecting Hải Phòng, Hanoi, and other coastal area in the north of Vietnam. Why not? And also, from the beginning, VinFast committed not only to develop by importing from foreign countries, but also by developing the whole supporting industries system needed in Vietnam, Of course, we could never have 100% produced in Vietnam, manufactured in Vietnam only. We need still some part for importation, but we also need for supporting industries in Vietnam to develop, not simply assembling like old up for foreign businesses in Vietnam so far, only assembling. And very few supporting companies in Vietnam could provide for foreign companies. But for VinFast, until last year, it had already over 300 Vietnamese industrial companies working with that to provide spare part and own components needed for the industry. So anyway, we believe that the development of VinFast is good. And even with the very big increase of the international competition today in the area, particularly the competition from China, but we still believe that VinFast can survive and can continue to develop. And I really hope that in Vietnam, in future, we may have more companies like VinFast, or for the new project in Vietnam, like the high-speed railway project connecting Hanoi and Saigon in North and South Vietnam. We have a very huge project in Vietnam. We have now more Vietnamese private companies ready to do that. Like the recent inauguration of the new process for Hoa Phát company, which is used to produce steel in Vietnam, and now to cooperate with a German company to produce steel for the railway. Yeah, we need pioneers like VinFast in order to encourage other pioneers in other areas. The bigger ones really today are among a new process of competing and cooperating with each other in order to upgrade or to bring the new industries for Vietnam, to develop new industries for Vietnam. And they are really needed. And they can, we hope they can become a big leader in the new value chains we develop in Vietnam, so that SMEs in Vietnam can also develop together with them.
We've covered a lot of the different reforms that happened in Vietnam over a very long period of time. And you yourself played a role in certain parts of that reform process. When you were advising leaders, what kinds of evidence or approaches did you find effective to change minds and influence them with evidence?
I myself, personally, I had two strong points for my own when I joined the advisory group to the Prime Minister Võ Văn Kiệt and then Prime Minister Phan Văn Khải. The first one is that among the advisors to them, I was the only one to work with and within the businesses in Vietnam. My position at VCCI was working with businesses in Vietnam. So my lifetime job was working at VCCI with businesses in Vietnam. So I know right away which are their strengths, which their weaknesses, what things they want to see in the policies of Vietnam, which policies are good for them, which policies are bad to them, what we need to improve the business environment so that they can do better, the Vietnamese one can develop better. That's one thing. And the second strength of mine is that at the VCCI for rather long time, I was also responsible for the International Relations Department of VCCI. During the time when VCCI was served as the contact point for all foreign businesses which want to come to do business with Vietnam, including for foreign businesses who want to invest in Vietnam. So with that, I could learn, I could help them, but I also could learn a lot from experiences in different countries on how they could develop their own business, how they could attract more FDI, how they could develop better the trading relations with the outside world, and also cooperation, FinTech cooperation with the outside world. So it is such evidence from the practice of working in Vietnam and in a number of countries that I could tap the government. I always bring the problems in Vietnam, what Vietnam can do, what Vietnam need to do better, and at the same time, make comparison with others to prove that other countries could do better in Vietnam thanks to better ways they do. And Vietnam need to follow them, need to learn from them in order to do better. In fact, with the integration process in Vietnam, we could have also more and more foreign organizations coming to Vietnam, not only to do business, but the organizations like the World Bank, ADB, IMF, and a number of foreign governments through their ODA programs could help Vietnam a lot also on the reform process. They could help Vietnam a lot. And we at the FIC group of the government working very closely with such foreign advisors to Vietnam, not only from the World Bank or from ADB, IMF, but also from Harvard University, for example, from the researchers from Korea on the examples and lessons from Korea, why they could become dragon in so short period of time, etc. So you could learn from others, and we could bring them to Vietnam with a lot of necessary knowledge and understanding needed in order to change the mindset and also to upgrade the skill of the leadership and the government of Vietnam at different level. Yeah. So I think the role of advisors were mainly in both aspects. In fact, when we serve as advisors to Võ Văn Kiệt and Phan Văn Khải, they always ask us not only to bring our own ideas to them, but we need to consult at maximum level to the society in order that they could understand what the society in Vietnam, business community or the communities want to see in Vietnam, what the farmers think, what the laborers think, what people working in other area thinks about the policy and what the government need to do in order to do better. So we help the government a lot, not only from our own knowledge or understanding, but also from the voice, collecting voice from the community, from the society, to top leaders so that they can learn.
This has been Ideas in Development. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a like or a 5-star rating wherever you were listening or watching. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube, or we even have a Substack. As always, all of our episodes can be found on the VoxDev website.